Mid-Ohio implies the existence of Bottom Ohio and Top Ohio. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Greetings, I'm RJ O'Connell, filling in for an absent, but still very much with us in spirit and in our hearts, Dre Harrison. Welcome to episode 266 of Motorsport 101. This will be our episode where we talk about the IndyCar doubleheader at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, which is also an IndyCar course, as you may very well know. Ryan King, good afternoon.
Hello, and I like that you finally acknowledge the existence of a Top and Bottom Ohio, because I don't know if you did, but I watched Thursday Night Football, and we definitely got to see Top Ohio, Top Bottom Ohio.
Oh, my. Oh, wow. Oof, this, not even a minute in, this podcast is already getting pretty steamy. One major protagonist in that Battle of Ohio was Louisiana State University alum Joe Burrow, and this leads us to introduce Chris DeHardy for this podcast. Chris, how are you feeling?
Feeling pretty well, and fellow Louisiana State University alumnus as well. You know, whenever someone, the IndyCar Series, goes to Mid-Ohio, you know, it's just like, okay, that's a Scott Dixon playground, you know, let's look on to the rest of the races. Wait a minute, he didn't win either race? What the hell happened?
Not only did he not win either one of these races, but this championship fight's not quite over just yet. We'll talk about Joseph Newgarden, Scott Dixon battling at the front of the championship and the implications that these two races had. Some long struggling performers finally getting their due as Will Power takes his first win of the season and Andretti Autosport sweeps a podium after a wretched season. But we've got tons of news to talk about as well, including news on driver announcements for 2020 and beyond. Sebastian Bourdais is coming back. Scott McLaughlin is finally here. We're officially racing on the streets of Nashville. We've also got, if time permits, news from other series as well, so thank you very much for listening and watching. The places where you can find us on social media, we're at motorsport101.com, and of course, youtube.com/motorsport101. Please subscribe if you've not already, and be sure to click the bell for notifications, so that way you can be notified when new videos like this go out. If you want to follow us on our personal handles, you can, at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, at C. DeHardy, and at C. Buckley917. Cam is also not here. He has a new job lined up, which is good to see. But he'll still be here. Circumstance permitting, of course. Facebook.com/motorsport101. Twitter at motorsport_101. And support from our patrons at patreon.com/motorsport101. Helps us out a lot. It truly does. It gets us audio equipment. It helps support the show a lot. For $5, you get early access to all of our shows. For $10, you get in the supporters club of our Discord section. For $15, you get a book. You get actual literature by backing Motorsport 101. It's true. The Kick, written by our friend Dre Harrison. And with that housekeeping out of the way, let's get into the Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio doubleheader weekend. And Chris alluded to it, that Scott Dixon has had a plethora of success and he is in the form of his career. Which, to be fair, he is almost usually in the form of his career, but not necessarily this weekend. Because Scott Dixon had to come a long way back from 17th on the grid after a terrible qualifying performance for race one to just barely sneak his way into the top 10 in race one. And then in race two, he just spins on his own, but not before being taken out as collateral in a clumsy first corner, first lap incident. He has to work his way back to get another top 10 finish in that race, and the big damage was done when Joseph Newgarden finished second in race one, and what was a 96-point lead going into this weekend has now been whittled down to 72 points. And without bonuses for laps led, pole position, there's effectively 150 points still available in these final three races over two race meetings, the doubleheader at the Harvest Grand Prix at the Indy Road Course, and the season finale on the streets of St. Petersburg, Florida. No, for real this time, it's actually happening.
And the Harvest Grand Prix, we should go ahead and just say, is allowing spectators. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway announced today that there will be 10,000 spectators that will be allowed to attend the Harvest Grand Prix at two different grandstands where they're going to be stationed at. Face mask required for the whole time that you're there. But let's face it, if you're going on public, you really should be wearing it in the first place. So that, yeah.
Damn right. So, King, yes. I ask you, do you think Joseph Newgarden still has a shot to run this back and potentially put a late title push on Scott Dixon over these next three races?
It's hard to say. Like, after Gateway, a lot of people kind of said that, you know, championship over, it's Dixon's title. Oh, ooh, dear. Yeah. But not only did Mid-Ohio show that, hey, you know, they're closing the gap to Dixon, it shows that, yes, even Scott Dixon has bad days, and a bad day could come at any venue, even ones where Scott Dixon's historically strong at. So it's not as close, like, it's not as close as the numbers might make it appear, that, like, you know, they took a big chunk out of Dixon's title lead, but it's the fact that Dixon can make mistakes, that you just need to consistently put in good days, and maybe Scott Dixon has an off day, and you could catch him.
Let me put it to you this way, it's just my own opinion, your mileage may vary. The only way Scott Dixon loses this championship, in my opinion, is if he turns into Alvaro Bautista.
And it's very
weird. I don't even watch World Superbikes, and I know that reference. Oh, thanks, Lord. 2019 M101 Award Show.
Oh, hey. Man. It's very rare that you see something like this happen to Scott Dixon at Mid-Ohio, where in 15 previous starts, he had only finished outside the top 9 twice, and we had won 6 times at this track. So for him to only just barely scrape by with 2 10th place finishes is something. And Joseph said it himself. He has to finish well and make the most of when Scott Dixon cannot perform if he is to have any hope at the championship going into these next couple of races. Have the results here from the first race on Saturday. Will Power wins from pole position ahead of Joseph Newgarden in a Penske 1-2. Alexander Rossi finishes third. Graham Rahal 4th, Ryan Hunter Ray 5th, Felix Rosenquist in 6th, Jack Harvey 7th, Marinus VK the top rookie in 8th, Colton Hurt in 9th, Scott Dixon rounds at the top 10, that it's Pato O'Ward, Alex Palou, Connor Daly, Santino Ferrucci, Marcus Ericsson, Mats Chilton, Takuma Sato, Simon Pagenaud, and Oliver Askew. Finishers on the lead lap, Zach Veach, Charlie Kimball, Dalton Kellett, and Marco Andretti all finished one lap down in race 1. But the big story from this race 1, reports of Will Power's demise have been, once again, greatly exaggerated, because even if Will Power has a terrible first half of the season, you can almost always bank on him to win in the second half of the year for his 14th consecutive winning season in the IndyCar Series.
And what's mind-blowing to me is that this is his first ever win at Mid-Ohio. In 2016, Simon Pagenaud bullied his way past him, coming through the final corner to win there. 2017, Newgarden pulls an amazing dummy move on him early in the race to get around him. This is a track that really should be, you know, one that Power should have won at years ago. But of course, to win at Mid-Ohio, you have to go through Scott Dixon. And, you know, Dixon's proved to you he can win from last place. And this was a race that Power just grabbed by the throat and said, "You're mine. You know, this is it." So, yeah, it was a great result for Power. Newgarden being second and Rossi third, that's an entire podium where you've got, actually no, the top four are all Mid-Ohio winners, because Graham Rahal finishing fourth, he won there in 2015 at his home race.
It is fascinating to look at the numbers here. Will Power picking up career win number 38, and of course pole position number 60, which puts him 7 away from Mario Andretti's all-time record, which is one of those where we keep saying we think these records are never, ever, ever going to be touched, and Will Power is right there at a time where he desperately needed it because of drivers that we'll talk about later on the show. Obviously, great to see Will Power still on form. Penske 1-2 finish, and go and a bit of foreshadowing going into the next day that Alexander Rossi is able to pick up a podium finish at Mid-Ohio, because he has desperately, desperately, desperately needed anything resembling a break this year, because it has not been kind to Alexander Rossi in 2020.
No.
Going into that race two, big surprise, Andretti Autosport, who have struggled for most of the season, not just win the race with Colton Herta taking his third career victory from pole position, but sweeping the podium as Alexander Rossi backs up third place with a second place finish. Ryan Hunter Ray is third. Graham Rahal and Marcus Ericsson round out the top five. Then it's Simon Pagenaud, Will Power, Joseph Newgarden, Pato O'Ward, Scott Dixon with that 10th place finish as mentioned, Rinus VK, the top rookie in 11th, then Harvey, Chilton, Ferrucci, Askew, Daveley, Veach, Sato, Kimball, Andretti, and Kellett. Those were your 21 finishers. We should point out that we did have some, shall we say, some avoidable contact at the start of the race. It was Colton Herta and Santino Ferrucci starting on the front row. They lunge in the corner, and it looks like Ferrucci's a little bit too over-eager to make a maneuver, which unfortunately collects Felix Rosenquist and Alex Palou in the process. Neither one of them would finish the race. King, you had seen this incident. Take me through this.
I mean, it's sort of a situation where, you know, especially at a start when everyone's so close together, and it's a situation where it was sort of Santino assuming that he could just rejoin the track, no problem, continue on as normal, but when everyone's so bunched up together at the start, and you can't just rejoin the track, assuming that the guy that you're pulling in front of could just check up, because he can't check up because there's a guy behind him, and then a guy behind him, and a guy behind him. So, pretty much just put everyone in a situation where it's like, hey, do I wreck avoiding you, or do we both wreck? And, yeah.
Two into one just didn't work there, and you know, it had rained earlier in the morning, leading to one of the road, one of the road to Indy races actually had to run after the IndyCar race. And so, you know, there was no grip on the grass for Ferrucci, but still, when he turned the wheeler to the right to get back onto the track, it just took him right into Alex and to, Felix there. And yeah, that avoidable contact penalty was an absolute no brainer.
Yeah.
He was the only driver to get, so he was sent to the back of the field. That effectively ruined his race, though not to the extent that ruined Felix and Al Palou, who just couldn't get going. But I cannot talk enough about how confident the Colton Herta looked in this race. And to be fair, when you watch these two races, these were two pole-to-win victories where the winner dominated these races.
Yeah,
like, for Will Power, you sort of expect at this point, but I want to put it out there, and I know Robin Miller is a love him or hate him personality, but I saw this headline and want to share it. When it comes to Colton Herta, they don't make young drivers like they used to. They make them better.
Yeah. But yeah, in terms of the racing, like, Mid-Ohio is basically America's version of Mugello, where there's only like one or two, like there's one definite overtaking zone. There's a second one if you really push for it. And no one could get close enough to really attempt a move for the lead.
The thing about I just lost my train of thought. Never mind, skip it.
You got it.
It'll probably come back to me. Just keep going.
That's okay, man. Because like I did manage to catch some of these races. I mean, not necessarily ISA classes. There was some great action between. But really, you look at these races and you think that they're setting the table for some very interesting battles going into the final stretch of this season, as we'll talk about here in a bit. So as we go through these championship standings, and it's still Scott Dixon on top, as we've mentioned, but he had a 96-point lead, and again, that's come down to 72 points of an advantage over Joseph Newgarden. That is 456 for Dixon, 384 to Joseph Newgarden. We got an interesting battle for third place in the championship. Pato O'Ward, still third on 338 points. Colton Herta and Will Power, with their victories, jumped to fourth and fifth in the standings. And another guy who had a great day at his home track, which he is very proud to tell you is his home track, is Graham Rahal, with a couple of fourth place finishes. He actually moves ahead of his teammate Takuma Sato into sixth and seventh in the standings, respectively. Then you get further down to Simon Pagenaud at 277 points. Ryan Hunter-Reay, 9th on 260. Santino Ferrucci, 10th on 249. He is 5 points ahead of Felix Rosenquist in 11th. Very curious Rookie of the Year battle playing out, because with another top 10 finish, it looks like Rinus VK has a little bit of breathing room. He's 224 points, 15th overall in the standings. Alex Palou is 185 points. He's 17th in the overall ranking. And Oliver Askew is not too far behind on 181 points. And certainly have to feel with Rinus VK in his recent run of form. Four top 12 finishes in these last four races between Gateway and Mid-Ohio. You feel like he is now odds-on favorite to take Rookie of the Year.
And it's crazy because he's the only one of those three rookies without a single podium finish. Palou did very well at Road America. Askew did a great job over at Iowa Speedway. But you look at Alexander Rossi in 12th place. When he got out of Gateway, he was in 18th place. So, yeah, this is definitely not where he's used to being. But, you know, even Scott Dixon had to deal with 2004, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. He gained 6 spots just from this race weekend alone, and that was one of the big talking points as the season coming down the line is, you know, if it wasn't for Colton Herta, this season would be a write-off for Andretti Autosport. Because you look at Ryan Hunter-Reay, he's just now cracked the top 10 in the standings after a couple of top 5 finishes. Rossi is down there in 12th. And Zach Veach, who is a major player in the silly season, has not finished inside the top 10 since the very first weekend of the season at Texas. Really, the only drivers that are punching above their weight, I feel, in Andretti-related equipment are Herta in 4th and Jack Harvey, who had another solid weekend and is 14th in the standings.
Yeah, for Veach, I guess if you put in that very long sound effect, that you could pretty much describe a season with that. I mean, he had 4th at Texas, and then it's just been absolutely nowhere. It's sad because he's, you know, this is his third year at Andretti Autosport, and you know, given his performances on the road to Indy the last couple of seasons that he was in there, I was expecting more top 10 finishes, but
absolutely,
I don't understand it. I really don't. And Marco's right behind him too. He's 13 points down on Veach as well. I just don't see where Veach is at Andretti Autosport next year. But I mean, I'm not the one signing the check, so my opinion really doesn't matter in that case.
Yeah, they are. It's Hunter-Reay. It's Andretti who we should also mention is. He is 21st in standing, so not been a great year for Andretti Autosport in the whole. 3 out of its 5 drivers are out of contract at the end of this year, and it's looking like James Hinchcliffe, after a solid handful of performances. And can I say, he has been excellent on television, though it is still weird that he's on television when he has so much to give as a driver. It's looking like he is very much at the forefront of a full-time return to IndyCar, which IndyCar will be back in 2 weeks' time on October 2nd and 3rd. It is the return of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course and the inaugural, in this modern era at least, the IndyCar Harvest Grand Prix, which of course was released in Japan as the IndyCar Grand Prix of Seasons. I will take bonus points for anybody who gets that obscure reference. But we had more IndyCar news to discuss, starting with Some race announcements. This weekend, IndyCar made it official for the first time in a long time. Pending, of course, a shutdown from local authorities or NIMBYs. We're going to have a new street race. And it's going to be in my backyard. Kind of.
Yes.
And then soon won't be my backyard longer because I intend to move soon within these next 2 months. The Music City Grand Prix on the streets of Nashville, Tennessee is confirmed on a multi-year deal, and the first running will be August 8th, 2021. And King, what an interesting street course they have designed for us.
It has big, massive, original F1 Miami Grand Prix vibes.
They're going to drive over a bridge, Chris. The Korean Veterans Bridge will become a major landmark of this event. So too is Nissan Stadium, home of the Titans and Nashville Soccer Club. Your thoughts, Chris, on this brand new street track?
From the overhead view, it looks like a ladle.
Looks like a little gravy ladle. Get you some gravy on the side.
It drives right by the Tennessee Titans Stadium as well. And there is a former public relations person from IndyCar that now works for the Titans. So I'm pretty sure she's going to be very happy to see the IndyCar series setting up right outside where she now works. I've driven by that area last year on my way back home from Barber Motorsports Park. It's a pretty good area. I'm looking forward to seeing how they arrange the street circuit. Nashville's an interesting market. Although, if you really wanted to do something wild, we could, in theory, go to the Concrete Abomination that's right outside of Nashville the next week. Nope. and have a combination ticket, and someone from Tennessee could put up a crap load of money for someone that wins both races. I'm just saying. The Dolly Parton Challenge. Come on. You got to see. Come on. I can picture it now.
Oh, wow. They're suggesting a Music City Grand Prix followed by a 200-mile oval race at the Nashville Super Speedway in Lebanon.
Yes. Yes. I'm suggesting that. I'm suggesting that Dolly Parton puts up some money to have a big thing for the Imagination Library. Let's do something big here. Let's think outside the box here creatively.
We already have a race going over a major bridge. I think we're good.
but at National Super Speedway, the trophy for winning is a guitar.
That's true, but I'm sure there are plenty of guitars around. I've been to some pretty nice guitar shops in Nashville, Tennessee.
Don't bring Kyle Busch to one, though.
Yeah, that's true. Two fun facts about this event. It's going to be one of the only major racing events to cross over a major body of water. And this will be the first new street course added to the calendar since the Houston Street Circuit in 2013 on the site that was a football stadium.
Even though that wasn't entirely,
new.
No, not entirely new because they'd done Houston before.
Yes, in 2006 and 2007. Well, the first site was at a different part downtown, I think.
Yeah. But Champ Card raced in that exact area.
Yeah, that's right. For Mark Miles, Nashville is a world-class city and global entertainment capital that provides an exceptional platform for our series, from professional sports teams and top live music acts to a burgeoning food and culture scene. It is a perfect home for a racing event of this magnitude. Urban street festivals have become a huge part of our DNA at IndyCar, and this three-day festival, complete with a course that pushes the limits, will highlight everything Nashville and the sport have to offer, providing international travels, racing enthusiasts, and local thrill seekers alike with an experience of a lifetime. Hey, at least it's not another gosh darn bachelorette party!
You know, one thing I do want to bring up about this, I saw a tweet about this about a few hours after the announcement came out. The people behind this race were going to do a two-hour presentation for Roger Penske. Roger cut the presentation short after just 10 minutes and said, okay, we're going racing.
Yeah.
King, I have very good news for you today.
What?
And you probably know what I'm... Because you know that I know that you know that I know that you are a huge proponent of the only man to win four consecutive American national titles in a row, Sebastian Bourdais. And we have missed him dearly this season if you don't watch IMSA. Sebastian Bourdais is back. Not just for the end of the 2020 season, which was previously arranged. He was set to drive part of the season in the 2020 car. Things just had not worked out yet. But he is back full-time for 2021, driving the number 14 for AJ Foyt Racing. Now, I know it's Foyt, but King, you gotta be happy that your man's is back.
I'm definitely happy. Not gonna lie, when you know, it was announced that, hey, Foyt are gonna have a press conference tomorrow, I was worried. A lot of people on social media were worried.
I was a little worried too, not gonna lie, but this is a much better development.
Yes, with Bourdais being back full time. I hope it isn't the usual Foyt kiss of death, because for the most part, people who race full time at Foyt, their next full time seat is not an IndyCar.
Assuming they get one.
Yeah.
assuming they get one, of course, but you know, they have a veteran driver that they can rely on for feedback and support. They desperately need this now that Tony Kanaan is moving further out of the picture. And I knew that Bourdais was not going to be done, because when he was out of that coin ride, when he signed this part-time deal for 2020, he said, you know, hey, I'm not done with IndyCar. He said it himself, the conclusion of my IndyCar career was never meant to be dictated by Dale Coyne's decision, and certainly not under the time frame that I was faced with, says Bourdais. And therefore, I didn't want this to be the end after 2019. I really want to end my IndyCar career under my own terms. And when I feel like I'm either not going to be capable of bringing something to a team that I want to be a part of, or I stop wanting to do it, or I stop being competitive, and I just don't feel that I'm there. It's been a pretty solid in IMSA this season. Obviously, he's still got the drive and the passion, and obviously, great, great champion. And
he hadn't lost anything.
Oh, no, definitely not. But he'll be back starting at the Harvest Grand Prix. Dalton Kellett's slate of races is run. Tony Kanaan's slate of races run. So now it is Bourdais in the 14 car for the final three races, which again, the Harvest Grand Prix doubleheader on October 2nd and 3rd, and then St. Petersburg to close out the season.
Teams said they're going to have three cars at the Harvest Grand Prix. They're going to have Kellett there, as well as Kimball and Bourdais.
Oh, nice. That is a good spot. Bourdais, this so far in the championship, they've run five rounds at IMSA. He has not finished outside the top four in any one of them, alongside co-driver Joao Barbosa.
Last bit of IndyCar news looks really interesting.
Oh, boy. We were hoping, and we were so devastated when the world was turned upside down, and we knew and just assumed it was never going to happen, for at least certainly not for 2020. But, Chris, Scott is here. It's the battle for the best Scott, who's actually from New Zealand. only this one actually represents New Zealand. Scott McLaughlin is here.
Scott,
he's coming.
Arrived.
Before everything, and I'm just going to phrase it, before everything happened, Scott was supposed to take place in like five or six races this year, and then, you know, the world lost its collective minds, and everything happened. Having watched Scotty the last few years in Australian supercars, he's got such an engaging personality and is so warm and welcoming.
Oh, we love him. And what other active drivers have a award on our podcast that is given in a positive light?
Okay.
Scott McLaughlin.
Well, and not only that, what I showed my father when I was at my parents' house over the course of the first few months of this whole situation, I actually showed him. He's like, yeah, who's this guy Scott McLaughlin that Penske was going to have driving for a few races? And I showed him the last few laps of the Adelaide race from 2014 when he drove the Volvo.
Yeah.
And then I said,
last corner pass, and that very infamous slip of the tongue in the post-race interview.
And I said, Dad, this is why people know him for those two, mainly known for these two things. One, for not letting Supercar's version of Jimmy Johnson rattle him. And then two, for being so happy at finishing second that he just blurted out the F word in front of everybody. And everybody loved him for it. I don't recall him ever being penalized. I don't recall him being fined for that.
Well,
I
think number one, it's Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Look,
I mean, we pretty much acknowledge that this is a much different society.
Well, okay.
Chris and Zane can attest to this.
Look. James. What I'm going for here is that, you know, normally sanctioning bodies have, you know, codes of conduct. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't say certain things.
Yeah.
David Reynolds, I'm looking at you here. Anyway, Bathurst 2014 or 2015, if any of y'all want to know. Anyway, but no, I guess it was because it was such a moment of exuberance. It was just a case of no one cared. And it was he was a very likable guy. I mean, unless you were a fan of Craig Lowndes in the 2018 Supercar season finale.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a very good move for IndyCar to have another person from that side of the world. Because I think, was he born in Australia, then he went to New Zealand? Or was he born in New Zealand, went to Australia?
He's born in New Zealand, went to Australia, came in very, very young. And just some of his statistics, and I know this is Wikipedia, yeah, and this is always subject to change, but of course he is the reigning back-to-back Supercars champion. He currently leads the standing and is well on his way to a third straight title on the way out. He already has 53 race victories in his career, over 232 starts. He's only been around since 2013. He reset the record for the most wins of the season. He won last year's Bathurst 1000. Dubious circumstances or not, he's done it all in Supercars. And what an excellent move this is. And just think, we're going to get Scott McLaughlin in IndyCar. We've had Fernando Alonso do a couple tours of duty. And we're going to get Jimmy Johnson. IndyCar, I don't know how they do it, but they seem to be getting guys from all different other series to at least want to check it out a little.
Yeah, because I think while the popularity for IndyCar isn't there, it's still, you know, a tenth of NASCAR's popularity.
Yeah, we're never going to get back to where it was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, what have you.
There's still the history and the prestige behind not only the Indianapolis 500, but IndyCar itself, the national championship. This is motorsport's oldest championship by a large margin.
That's right. We were talking about some fun stories about the Astor Cup,
so, and the Vanderbilt Cup. Believe it or not, this year is the 99th national championship season.
That's right. I don't even think college football has had a national championship that long. I know it hasn't.
College football has had more national championships. Like, it's the only sport that's had.
But to be fair, in college football, you can just say you're the champion if you really feel it deep down in your heart.
Although, let's be real here. We say college football is not professional, but you've got to play at a professional level, especially if you're going to beat teams in the SEC.
But yeah, just you know, IndyCar, by far the oldest championship, 99th season. Formula One's on its 70th season, and it's the second closest championship.
Scott McLaughlin is already fifth on the all-time wins list. Let me cross-reference this here. Yeah, he's fifth on the championship. He's fifth in all-time series wins. Only yep. Win Cup, Lowndes, Scaife, and Tander are ahead of him. He's ahead of Peter Brock and Glenn Seton.
Yep.
And he's not even 30 years old yet.
Glenn Seton, who, for those of you who don't know, is so famous for coming so close to winning Bathurst in 95? And his engine failed on his family-owned Falcon with, five or six laps to
go? Definitely, yeah. He was, of course, the guy. He was, like, for NASCAR fans, it would basically be the equivalent of Tony Stewart, you know, a decorated champion, one of the best there was. He just couldn't win the one big race in the calendar every year.
Or Michael Andretti.
But yeah. Yes, but to reiterate, Scott McLaughlin will be driving for Penske at the season finale at St. Petersburg.
In the number 3 Shell V-Power Dolaris Chevrolet at St. Petersburg. And the rumor is, and this is only speculation for now, that Scott's going to be making a full-time debut, and it's not going to be to replace Will or Simon. It's going to be a 4-car operation like it was a few years back when he had Will and Simon and Juan and Elio.
And I wonder what car number they're going to run, considering that Joseph won't have the 1. I assume they're going to run 2, 3, and 12.
Yeah, because Elio's going to be a free agent at the end of the season.
They're going to run 2, 3, and 12. They don't own the rights of the 4. We'll get to it.
McLaughlin's going to be in the 3.
In the 3. But
they've already posted a picture of the car.
But what number is Newgarden going to run?
I think it goes back to the 2.
2. He'll be in the 2.
Or maybe it couldn't run the 21 because that's Carpenter's. Yeah. I would love to see that. It would have made my old Joseph Newgarden CFH racing shirt timely again.
It's not in the closet anymore. I can finally wear it now. Sorry, hangers.
Look, it's a very good lounge shirt. Lots of things happening in IndyCar, and I know we will be talking about a lot more stories as this offseason progresses. We did have some news from other championships as well we want to get to, since we do still have time, of course. Again, thank you very much for listening and watching. If you're watching us on YouTube, why not go ahead, click the subscribe button if you haven't already. And if you haven't hit that bell for notifications over there, why don't you just go ahead and do that?
Yeah.
Help us out tremendously. Sports cars are happening. By the time you're listening to or watching this, the 24 hours of Le Mans will have been completed. So in lieu of having an actual Le Mans 24-hour preview, we would like to say congratulations, Toyota Gazoo Racing, on your 3rd consecutive 24 hours of Le Mans overall victory for driver A, driver B, and driver C. And with that said, the future is looking a lot brighter because, King, the French are coming.
Yes.
The French are finally here. And they're not just bringing pepper mills.
Man, Alpine's coming. Peugeot's coming. It looks like the ACO are like, hey, French manufacturers, open door. Come in, please.
Absolutely. So, the Rebellion Racing LMP1 program is winding down at the end of the season, but we learned that Alpine, who, of course, are going to take over the branding of the Renault Formula One team. Alpine are going to take over Rebellion's old LMP1 program. They're going to continue that on, and their Eureka-designed LMP1 car, powered by a Gibson engine, will be grandfathered in for use in the 2021 FIA World Endurance Championship, which we do have a calendar announcement for that to talk about, too. Now the only problem is, how do you balance out an LMP1 with the new hypercar class, which is meant to be much slower, much less powerful by design? And that's going to be a tough one to crack, because Toyota's Pascal Vassilon is already saying that, you know, it's not fair to us if Alpine can have could just grandfather in a car that's already inherently more powerful than the one that we're spending months and months and months developing.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if not only the LMP1s were power-restricted, but also aero-restricted, like adding in additional bodywork to you know, lessen downforce, increase drag. Like, it's going to take a lot of work to handicap the LMP1s.
It's going to be a little bit silly.
Yeah.
And I know that Toyota is like, and I know Toyota's Toyota, they were the only OEM that stuck around through this whole time until we got to this bridge to get us to hypercar. But historically speaking, King, I'm not saying that there has been some sort of collusion, but there are data points that suggest that if there is an inherent bias, it's on home soil.
Yeah, pretty much you see it in every major French sporting event, whether it be the way that the Tour de France gives out their invitations heavily to French teams for the tour, or, you know, with the ACO and 24 Hour Le Mans, be like, hey, we're not gonna let the French manufacturers and French teams win, or give them the most invitations to the race, but, you know, we're gonna help them out a bit, you know?
It's like that time when they had one of the prototypes that had spun off, and, you know, the rule was supposed to be no more than, what was it, 10 meters away from the car, otherwise then the car is excluded, and the marshals were shoving a driver away from the car. It was a French team, and then they allowed him to go back, like, oh, I guess this 10 meters is bigger than the other car's 10 meters, huh?
Right.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So Alpine will be taking over Rebellion's spot in the FIA World Endurance Championship next year. The Signatec Alpine program, which has been so successful in LMP2, they're going to take their operations and move it up to the premier category. And of course, when we do get Hypercar in full scale come 2022, we will have Peugeot. They confirmed their commitment to day of recording, 18th of September, 2020, that they will compete at Le Mans in the Hypercar class. There was a rumor that they would go to LMDH. Ultimately, I think the big deciding factor was Peugeot has no presence in the United States where LMDH would primarily be competing. It'd be a little cheaper, of course, but got appeal to the home market. They're committed to 2022. Peugeot has a very much an on-again, off-again, on-again, and off-again relationship with the Grand Prix d'Endurance. But, of course, this is pretty cool. And can I just say, because I know the concept car, the one that they revealed in the renderings, it's not going to look that cool, but it does look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said they went for LMH hypercar. It gives them a level of aerodynamic freedom. They went over many studies. They wanted to choose something that works with their concept and their choice of engine architecture. And Peugeot are definitely going to make a splash when they arrive come 2022, which is about the time when we should expect the next generation of Daytona Prototype International, LMDH. We still don't know what the H stands for Chris, but IMSA revealed its next iteration of the premier category today in a press conference as well, and these cars will be eligible to race side-by-side against the hypercars at Le Mans.
And if you notice, the rendering that IMSA released, it looked an awful lot, the front of it, like a Porsche.
Yeah. Because that's been one of the hot rumors, and Porsche acknowledged themselves. They saw the regulations that were published today. They will have an off-the-shelf hybrid. They will be about 680 horsepower and about just a tick over 1,000 kilograms. They will be based on LMP2 chassis with manufacturer-inspired design cues. Porsche said they're interested, and so too have a lot of manufacturers. But today we got more technical regulations. We got the cost of some of the parts, including the hybrid powertrain system, which was a little bit more than we had originally expected, but it's
racing. Costs are always going to be higher than what you expect.
Oh, yes. We had dimension limits. We had power limits set. Bosch and Williams Advanced Engineering are going to develop the hybrid motors. 670 horsepower, and it looks like among the major brands that are interested, Acura, Cadillac, and Mazda, they're still around. Audi, Lamborghini, and Porsche representing Volkswagen, BMW, Ferrari, Ford, Hyundai, Lexus/Toyota, McLaren, and Renault/Nissan are all interested. Whether or not those plans actually come to fruition, who knows? But things are looking good and positive. We need some positive news at the very top of endurance racing. No, unless you're watching Super GT, which you probably should have been watching it already in the first place.
I really should watch more of that. It's one of the only series in the world, I think, that has a dedicated tire war to it, which brings about a very interesting dynamic.
Well, feeling good about the future of endurance sports car racing?
Fantastic.
Are we all feeling good about our chances of taking blueberry pies to the face when Alpine wins Le Mans?
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
Are we all feeling good about pushing our friends into the Lake Lloyd at Daytona International Speedway when it is safe to come to the Daytona International Speedway? When things calm down a little?
Toki, you're number one.
Oh, man. I don't know if we can leave that in.
I really hope that we can get a larger group for the Rolex 24, like for car entries I'm talking about, because you know, the Daytona 24 this year, it was missing.
It's a little thin.
It was a little thin. There was no Nissan. And really, this could give a massive boost to the field, and I can't wait to see it happen.
I would love to see it as well. NASCAR is in the playoffs. We have one more story here. NASCAR is in its playoffs, of course. Kevin Harvick is still one of the odds-on favorites. Brad Keselowski won at Richmond. He was in the silly season until he wasn't. But a figure who is our good friend Bubba Wallace, formerly, as of 2020, of Richard Petty Motorsports. Bubba is now a free agent, and there have been many curious potential landing spots that he has been linked with. Initially, the prevailing rumor is with Chip Ganassi Racing in the number 42 Chevrolet, which, if you believe in karma or kismet or good things happening at the expense of people who've made terrible decisions, gotta say, Bubba Wallace going to the 42 car, considering who was in it at the start of this season, would be pretty awesome. Then there was the rumor that Hendrick Motorsports may have a seat available, because, of course, Jimmy Johnson is stepping away, but Rick Hendrick said whoever is going into the car is already a playoff contender, and Bubba Wallace sadly did not make the playoffs. But then there is one fascinating new player in the story. Gott Brothers Racing missed the Daytona 500, and that upset me because Daniel Suarez deserved better. But Daniel Suarez is stepping out of that ride at the end of 2020, and the prevailing rumor is that Toyota or Joe Gibbs Racing or somebody is going to inject a giant fucking a whole lot of cash, and most importantly, a charter so that they can make all the races into this Gott Brothers number 96 Toyota Camry to make it more appealing to sign a potential free agent driver like Bubba Wallace or like Eric Jones, who is on the way out at Gibbs. A lot of places. And we still don't know what's going to happen with the old 43 car that Wallace is going to be leaving this season. So we know that Bubba Wallace can bring in sponsors and is by far one of the sport's most popular drivers. Where do y'all think he's going to land next season? I would certainly hope it's in a competitive ride, something that he can show more of his potential.
Yeah, part of me does hope it's the Ganassi 42, just on the basis of it's a lot higher profile, a lot more competitive ride than the 43. The proposition of going to the 96, part of it feels plausible, but, again, that line of thinking about going there hoping for more, not being guaranteed a better ride. Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Given how 2020 has been so far, I want to see more chaos in the situation. Rick Hendrick said that the current driver of the 48 is in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Let's get Will Byron switch over to the 48 and put Bubba Wallace in the 24.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of that as a possibility, but I do like where you're thinking.
Now, of course, this is all completely speculative. There's absolutely nothing behind this except for crazy, wild 2020 thinking.
Please be sure to credit at @motorsport_101 on Twitter.
Yeah, we got the scoops if it happens to be true.
And all I'm saying is that if 2020 does its thing, this would be the most 2020 thing to happen. Oh, and if you subscribe to Motorsport 101 on Patreon and back Motors Podcast at the $15 level, you will get this book that our friendly neighborhood host Andre Harrison bought, and it's what I got in the early part of the podcast to bring up here.
That's right. We are accredited writers. we're journalists, so of course this may happen, or I don't know, something weird might happen, yeah. Or I don't know what's going to happen with this, but obviously best of luck to Bubba and everybody else as they look to find new work going into 2021, because times are tough for everybody. We'll be back next week to talk about, among other things, Lamar, any other news that may happen to come up, should anything crazy happen, and we got MotoGP on this weekend too. By the time you listen to this, of course, MotoGP will have already wrapped up the Grande Premio della Emilia Romagna at Mugello. Mezzano. I got Mugello on the brain.
Yeah, Mezzano. They didn't leave. They got locked into the circuit.
Oh no. They got locked into the circuit.
Since Apple just had their recent event announcing the new iPhones and Apple Watches, I do want to bring up one more thing. Mm-hmm. Those of you that follow American Openwheel Racing on the road course side know of Jeremy Shaw and his Team USA scholarship program. Today, the program announced that there are three people that are scholarship recipients for this year. Simon Sykes, unfortunately, will not be able to go to England to run because he's going to be racing for Legacy Autosport and Maserati Racing in the USF 2000 race at St. Petersburg. However, Bryce Aaron will be going, as well as Jackson Lee. Yes, Kevin Lee's son is going to the United Kingdom to race in the Formula Ford Festival and the Walter Hayes Trophy race.
Yeah. Should point out that is IndyCar commentator for NBCSN, Kevin Lee, and not World Wrestling Entertainment superstar Keith Lee.
On that note,
it's time to bask in our glory and get the hell out of Dodge. Motorsport101.com, youtube.com/motorsport101, click that button and that button, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter @motorsport_101, our personal handles @RJ O'Connell, @RyanEricKing, @CDeHardy, Trey is @Harrison101HD, Cam is @CBuckley917. Of course, if you wish to support the show, you can by visiting patreon.com/motorsport101. We have written pieces, we have podcasts, all sorts of good stuff. We'll be back to talk about all the racing action next week. But until then, for Dre Harrison and Cam Buckley, for King and DeHart, for Ryan King and Chris DeHardy, I'm RJ O'Connell saying thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Sayonara. Later, y'all.
Bye.
See you.
So how many blueberry pies do we need to bake?
I don't know. Enough to help Dre get through cuffing season.
Oh, God.
Will you stop?
Of course not.